Good afternoon. My name is Don Alden, and I serve as Director of Retirement Readiness with Geneva Benefits Group. And I have a good explanation why I'm here in my golf attire. I was playing with one of our vendors who supports the tournament and supports relief. And well, I left my phone, I think, somewhere on the golf course. Then that meant I only knew one way to get back here, which was 75 South, which was completely shut down because there was an accident. And so since I didn't have my cell phone, I had no way to tell John or Steven that this is where the presentation is. So I couldn't tell my wife that I needed some material. I couldn't take a shower. So I'm glad I have a little distance from you. I'm glad I got here in time because this is a particularly difficult subject, affordable housing for our pastors. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to do a brief introduction, and then most of our time is going to be spent with a panel discussion, and I'll describe who the panelists are in a moment. So that will be the format of this presentation. We want it to be highly interactive. So be thinking of questions. We have some that we have received already. John Medlock from our organization is going to be leading that part of this, and we'll have the opportunity to move through these items. The panel does consist of Ed Dunnington, who's president of Geneva Benefits, Tim Townsend, who is president of the PCA Foundation, Bryce Hales, who actually is pastor of Trinity and found a creative way to get into housing in a very expensive area, and then Stephen McGinnis, who works with Geneva, who's done a lot of work looking at these solutions. So that's going to be our panel discussion, our panel members for this meeting. First of all, what we see is there's a crisis. If you pull up anything in the various newspapers, Wall Street Journal, we've got the Pew Research Center. Fewer homes, starter homes are being built compared with two decades ago. Housing shortage is hurting every part of the economy. And what we have is home affordability crisis taking a toll on America's young adults. And what's true generally across the United States is also true with our population as well. When we look at home prices compared with wages, you don't have to really spend a lot of time thinking about this. Just let it sink in visually. The home prices are outpacing by double the hourly earnings. So we're having a, thank you. Is this turned on? Yeah. Good, thank you. So they're outpacing, and that's creating, in addition to the shortage, in addition to not historic highs, but record high interest rates, just putting so much pressure on our ministers trying to get into a home. I will say we're going to have a QR code as soon as my wife gets down here. That will have the presentation, so you'll have that available for you, okay? A little bit about the structure of pastoral compensation, particularly if there are any ruling elders here or those that are members of a finance committee. There are two main components. There's the salary component. There's the housing allowance component. Salary component is fully taxable. Housing allowance is not federally taxed. Then we have another set of allowances here, a CECA allowance to offset the minister's dual tax status, which of course makes all this a little bit even more interesting. And then we have other allowances, such as possibly health care. So these are the sources that are coming in that would be on that income side on a pay stub, these items here. Okay. And so I just wanted to go over that to remind us before we talk about different strategies. So let me take a breather here. Does that make sense, what you're looking at there? Any questions about that, these sources? Okay. And these are the sources that have to be reported on a W-2 in some form or fashion. And so that becomes something that we'll look at in various options to say what other things would have to be reported as we're looking at these different strategies for home ownership for ministers. All right? Good. We're going to look at these six options: manse parsonage, rent, purchase with a down payment help, purchase with an increase in compensation, purchase with a forgivable loan, and purchase with an equity arrangement. And the most technical one, of course, is going to be the equity arrangement at the end, and we'll spend some time describing that. Okay, we have the cards now. On those cards, there's going to be a QR code that's you can scan with your phone. It'll bring up a PDF. Should bring up a PDF of this presentation. So, all right, manse parsonage, pretty self-explanatory. Benefits are reduced strain on pastors' financial resources, and it's close, tends to be close to the church and its community. This was what we saw many, many decades ago. This was the standard way of getting pastors into housing. The drawbacks, of course, are that the minister and his family are not accumulating wealth or equity via home ownership. The home may not fulfill the family requirements. The family might have different requirements. That home has been there for possibly decades and used for multiple pastoral families, and so our pastor families, and so that might not be appropriate for them. And then there's restricted freedom regarding decisions about the property. Since there's possibility that this is managed by a committee, and so any decisions that would need to be made would be going through that committee too, making this just a very difficult, or a drawback at least, in terms of being engaged with this this property in this way. Of course, then there's renting, lower upfront costs. That is, there's no down payment. There's flexibility and ability. There's less responsibility for maintenance and repair. And again, we're not accumulating, the pastor and the family is not accumulating wealth or equity. And there still is that restricted freedom. They might have the freedom to pick something that's more appropriate for their family, but they might not have the freedom to do all that they might want to do with the property, given the fact that it's a rental. Okay. All right. What's going on when we look at home versus getting into a home versus getting into a rental? And what we see here is, again, there's a disparity. Median home salaries are 116, and the median apartment salaries are 64,000. Again, you're just seeing the difference that it takes to get in the home. Just yet another way of kind of pressing that issue home, that this is difficult, okay, for our ministers. Stephen, do you remember what that is? Do you remember what the purple line actually is?
So that is what your average
No. It's just the salary. Yeah. We're not saying anything about the amount they're taking. All we're saying is when we look at people that own homes, this is where they're sitting versus people that are renting, this is where they're sitting.
So by requirement, we're just saying, here's how it's played out.
Yeah. Basically just stating the problem another way. Okay. All right. We have the purchase with down payment help. The benefit is we accumulate wealth, and there's equity via home ownership, lowers the barrier to home ownership, potentially better terms on the mortgage. There's more money to put to the transaction. Drawbacks, creates unspoken expectations or strings attached with close family members. The gift may complicate the loan approval process. You've just got to make sure how that moves through and how they understand how that loan is being, how that gift is given and the terms of that gift. Okay. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Purchase, increased compensation. Again, we're getting the pastor into a home and they're building up equity. Does signal the church's commitment to the pastor. However, And this is something that we run into. I think Stephen, if somebody's interested in having him talk to this, what it really does, it just messes up the pay structure in a church. If pay is banded in certain ways, and you have a senior band, and you have middle band, lower band, and then you have seniority within those bands. If you're trying to get someone into the house and you've got someone who's been in their house for 10 or 15 years, you know, all of a sudden they're jumping pay bands and jumping kind of what would be appropriate for their level of seniority. Okay, I mean, so that can create tension, and appropriately so, we think. So again, this is very difficult, and there is an increased burden of getting this resource, pastoral resource, into the church and up and going. Okay, does that make sense? What would happen here? Again, tax implications. Increased compensation that's coming in as income. That's why we looked at pastoral compensation. And so that would have to be accounted for. This one is probably the most confusing. And again, Stephen might speak to this if someone would like him to when we have the panel discussion. Forgivable loan. There's home ownership here. It signals the church's commitment, and it does maintain some church asset flexibility, right? They don't have to own any property. The problem is there are complex legal and tax issues, and one of the reasons why Tim is here is, if we want to discuss that, he can basically say, this is hard to get around not treating this loan as income. The hoops that you have to jump through to make it particularly a forgivable loan is just might be too high. A lot of risk in terms of if the pastor leaves the call before the loan is fully forgiven, because you can't write the terms out, because if you write the terms out, then it's not forgivable. But if you don't write the terms out, then you sit in an ambiguous space with this person that you've offered a loan to. And so hence that ambiguity around the terms of the arrangement. Okay, we see this, and it concerns us greatly. There's a lot of things that aren't optimal in that arrangement. Finally, we have the equity share arrangement. The church, family, and or friends create an LLC which takes an equity share in the pastor's homes. Okay, and we're going to talk about that in a little more detail. We're going to talk about it. Bryce is going to talk about it from an experiential aspect, and then Stephen's going to present a little bit more technical aspect on how that works. The benefits are, again, accumulation of wealth and equity via home ownership. Equity returns to investors upon sale or dissolution of the relationship. No ambiguity around the terms of the relationship, or I should say, because I've got an attorney here, I should say, reduced ambiguity around the terms of the arrangement. There's always probably some ambiguity, but it's a well-defined relationship in terms of entering it, in terms of maintaining it, and in terms of exiting that relationship. The drawback, it requires the involvement of investment professionals and attorneys, and it just adds more complexity to the home sale or the home purchase, possible sale, again, relational items that might exist with the church. Okay, so again, we wanted to make this highly interactive. We figured that is what's going to drive home the information that you need to know in the best way possible. So any questions on those options? And of course, there's a myriad of variations on those options that I presented there. Yes. Oh, I know. I just want to make sure. Yeah.
I was just curious about the range of percentage in terms of this. Is there a norm of X percent for
of who does what?
Of like how much church owns.
Oh, we'll talk about that. Okay, thanks. Anything else? Yeah.
So I'm clear on my depth on this one, but with the equity arrangement, could it be treated almost like a forgivable loan?
Okay. Yeah, we'll talk about that. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to ask our four panelists to come forward. I'm going to ask John to kind of lead us in some discussion questions. So if you guys would mind sitting there.
Would it be better for them to pull
chairs
up here? Up there, but I think it may be better if you guys pull your chairs up here because you're hidden away in the corner.
Turn your projector
on. Yeah, turn the projector off.
Well, let me leave it on here for a second.
Yeah, we do need to.
And then
it'll be loud.
Let's see. Go ahead and hit the maybe the menu button will clear that. Go hit the exit button. Yeah. Okay. So I just put this up here. Bryce is intimately familiar with this. That arrow is pointing to the county in which he lives. Are you good to go? Okay. We'll get this. This is on. Yeah, thank you. Okay, what I'm going to do, I'm going to turn this over to John because John will explain a little bit and tee up Bryce due to his relationship with Bryce. So, John, thank you.
Yeah, hey, everybody. My name is John Medlock. I'm one of the vice presidents at Geneva. I'm going to lead us in, honestly, for the rest of our time here is going to be an interactive Q&A. So, start thinking of your questions. But what I'm going to do is ask each of our panelists a question to begin with to give you all time to process your questions. I'm going to start with Bryce, and I'm going to lead into it with a little bit of background and a little bit of personal history because back in 2010, I moved my family to the Central Coast of California to be the pastor at Trinity Presbyterian Church in San Luis Obispo, where I pastored for about 9.5 years. Before moving to Atlanta to join the staff of Geneva Benefits. And a couple of years later, Bryce replaced me and moved his family to San Luis. Now, if you're paying attention to dates, me moving my family there in 2009 might be significant because that was the dead bottom of the 2008 real estate crash, which was really bad for a lot of people, but was pretty good for me because that let me just barely afford a home in one of the most expensive areas in the country with some help from my parents. And we were able to buy a house in San Luis. Whereupon, in the intervening years, real estate prices on the West Coast did what they do and regressed to the mean and just went up and up and up and up. And so, you know, fast forward to 2021, 2022, when Bryce, you guys were moving out there, all of a sudden it was a different world, right? And so when Bryce and Ashley and their kids moved out there, 12 years later, it was just very, very different. So, Bryce, just tell us about your experience in moving to San Luis when you guys did. What problems did you face? What solutions did you consider, and what did you guys ultimately do?
Yeah, thanks, John. So,
up here.
Oh. And then you guys can pop. Should I stand? Should I sit? Does it matter?
Okay.
Okay, so we moved to San Luis Obispo, and we rented a house, sight unseen, and lived there, got our family settled. And after we'd been renting our house for about 18 months, our landlord told us that they were going to sell the house. And we were faced with a situation of, if we move into another rental, our kids maybe have to move to a different school. We know that our monthly board, housing payment is going to go up because in that 18 months, rents have gone up. And then you start thinking about the long term. We can't pastor in this context and be moving every day. And so we, through a couple of potential relationships, got in touch with an organization called Sycamore Equity. And if you want to talk more about this afterwards or email me, love to talk with you more about this, but what we started looking at is, so this has got to be a median home prices for San Luis Obispo County. The median home price in the city of San Luis Obispo is $1.2 million. So when we started looking at, okay, if our landlord wants to sell the house to us, if we're going to buy the house, our monthly payment, including taxes and California property taxes
mean, my church pays me pretty well. Like, it's an expensive place, but, like, that's basically what they pay me, right? So that's not a workable situation. And so working with Sycamore Equity, this is an organization that structures equity partnership deals to help people in ministry get into houses. And I think we're the second or third deal they ever closed. So it's still fairly early on. We closed our house in December 6 months ago. So it's still fairly early on in their
early adopters.
Yes, there we go. We were able to raise about $500,000 in equity. And the way that works is, I think, really significant because some people donated money to our church. We set up a fund. So we raised about $250,000 to our church that went towards equity in my property. But they also have the ability to, for other investors to invest equity in the house. Sorry, I should probably be more specific. They invest equity in an LLC. There's a LLC that is set up that owns equity in my property. So part of the benefit of this is the only owners of our house is my wife and myself. Our church does not own any interest in the property. Nobody can come and tell us that we should paint or mow the lawn better or anything like that. Investors were able to put equity in that property. And at some point, and this is where I'm like, have to say, I'm a pastor and I don't understand exactly how the math works out. But the idea is that at some point down the road, either we sell or potentially we can refinance and cash out the equity investors. They can get their money back. But a significant part of that is
that our church is building equity too, and they will get more than the money they
put into it, out of it, so that when John and my next pastor at our church comes, they're going to have an even bigger problem to deal with here. It's not going to be 1.2 million, it's going to be 2.4 million or something. So that's I'll stop there.
Yeah, no, that's good. Thanks, Bryce. I'm going to ask one more question to our panel and then open it up for questions from the group. And Stephen, I'm going to ask you question. So everybody, this is Stephen McGinnis. He's one of our financial planners at Geneva, who has done a lot of work with pastors and churches on this very issue. He's probably the one of us who's done the most kind of feet on the ground practical work with this. So Stephen, describe these equity agreements. Describe how they work, the work you've done, how they work, and why they work well for all the parties, and then just anything else you think that would be helpful for the group to know.
Sure. Okay. I am going to stand up so that I can talk through this. And I just took this from Sycamore Equity. There are other entities that do this kind of stuff. It's just that this is one that we've engaged with. They had this fun little chart that kind of can help explain what an equity partnership or equity share would look like. So, what they're doing here is just comparing what the problem is. If you had a home, I think on this one, the example, let me stand out of the way, is a $700,000 purchase. Basically, what that's going to, so now we're talking Nashville and not San Luis Obispo, probably. And by the way, I'll just say, like, this problem that we're talking about is wreaking havoc on call packages across the denomination. It's a problem with church planners. It's a problem when you've got a church that has a senior pastor and they're hiring an assistant pastor, and the senior pastor bought the house 20 years ago, and the assistant's coming in, and they want to be able to afford a home, but you almost have to pay him $50,000 more than the senior just to be able to get into a house. So that's why this has become, you know, where it almost feels like a little bit of a crisis situation because pastors are having to turn calls down. I mean, it's just, it's a mess. But anyways, so in a traditional setting, right, your payment, with interest and taxes and insurance and all that kind of stuff is going to be around $4,500. Now, there's a little ratio out there called the front-end ratio. It's 28%, and that ratio basically tells the bank that we will not loan you any money for a house unless this is only 28% of your total household income. Well, pull a calculator out and put in 4507 and divide it by 28%. That's a lot of money that you have to pay a pastor just so that they can afford a three-bedroom house in the Nashville area. Okay, so that's the problem. Okay, so what does a group like Sycamore Equity do? And there's others as well. They come in. You can do a fundraise, if you will, where people are investing into this LLC that gets created. The LLC creates an arm's length sort of relationship, because otherwise, when the employer is passing anything along to an employee, which is what the forgivable loan or the bonus thing sets up, you have lots of issues there. So anyway, so they come in and they basically take like a lien position against the house. They have equity in the home, and what that can effectively do is lower the monthly cost of the home and make that more sustainable for the pastor. And this can even be used after the fact, after a house has been purchased. If a pastor's kind of ahead of their skis a little bit, you can actually create something like this after the fact as well to relieve pressure as well. So this is just something that we're starting to see more and more of, just because of how difficult it's becoming. I guess maybe I'll share one more thing right now, let me pause. I'll pause there. So okay. There's any questions.
Yeah, that's good. Let's take a pause.
Okay.
Let's let you all ask questions on anything. If you've got questions on this, we're happy to drill down. If you've got questions on anything else that Don raised on his slideshow or anything else, this we really want this time to be yours as much as possible. So now is your time. That would be awesome. Thank you. Let's start here. I saw your hand first, sir. Yes.
What's the order of the lien position here?
Who has the primary
lien? Second. So your mortgage company, the mortgage company would have first lien, and the LLC would have second.
And your owner has third.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. Percentages that you're showing up there, are there regulations that say, hey, the equity share can be no more than 20%, can go to 40%? You know, obviously, the higher that is,
the lower the monthly payment is. Yeah.
This is just their example.
That's just an example.
And to give you real context, I mean, you said divide, right? This option, you got to pay your pastor $194,000 to be in this home. This, $133,000, right? This is real money. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The bank may have requirements how large of a second they will, well, or that they want the pastor to still have a large enough interest.
And I would say the pastor might also have a personal interest in having enough of a stake in the home so that 10 years from now, when he sells the home, he gets enough of the equity back that he can go buy a home somewhere else. But yes.
What are the tax implications for the portion?
Do you want to speak to that one? Go ahead. Are you sure?
Yeah, and then I'll correct you.
That is a regular occurrence.
If,
right.
Yeah. If there's one thing Tim is, it's consistent.
So this is the really, I think, incredible thing about this arrangement. So like when you do a forgivable loan or a bonus, obviously it has to be counted as income at some point. And there's a lot of debate out there about the timing of that and whatnot. But
think about this.
It's actually an investment that they're going to receive their money back when it's refinanced, with the home sales, and so there's not any any income tax issues. There will be capital gains tax issues at some point. But does that kind of answer your question? But there aren't any like employer to employee, because the church is not, that they're going to receive that money back, I guess, if that makes sense. You want to add anything?
Can you roll $1031 into the equity share and $1031 out of the equity share? Because it's an investment, but it's an LLC that you're investing, not a per se investment property.
Yeah, I,
Or does the principal reduction go to the homeowner that's been paying?
Well, no, they would get their portion of the property sale. But I've noticed, like in the Sycamore, and this may be true of you, Ryan, that there was a provision for a higher percentage repayment, not repayment, but the equity owner share owner getting a higher percentage of the ultimate sales price to account for the fact that they've been receiving no interest payment. Yes, or possibly,
but if the 20% times
1 point,
it's based on the percentage of how much they've invested, but the investors are going to get 101% of their equity when we sell it.
Or 102% or whatever, something
in
to compensate.
I mean, it's determined, it's going to be determined in each particular situation.
Is that negotiated or by statute?
Yes, negotiated.
There are no statutes with regard to that.
Okay. Let's let Stephen ask a question.
What's it clear to me is this like a capital campaign that you're doing, or is Sycamore Equity saying, I'm ready to give you all this cash?
Tell about how you approached various parties to raise the equity price.
Yeah. Well, so I leaned over to Stephen when Don put the slide up and said, another downside is you have to come up with equity.
Yeah.
So if the church has surplus funds that they want to just invest directly as the only equity partner, that's totally doable. Our church did not have that capacity. And so, but what this allows you to do is it's not just about fundraising. So a partnership between funds donated to the church, we're able to find a couple of donors outside of equity partners outside of our church who were able to invest equity for not a defined time, but 10 to 15 years in our property. You can also invest money from a donor advised fund, so money that's already been given to a charitable cause.
Yep.
In this.
Thank you. Can an individual use 401k dollars?
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
How about 403B?
I guess I have two questions. One is when you mentioned donations to the church for the fund, does that mean that was to go as an investor, or is that to go toward down payment or more? Like, where did that go?
That couldn't be donations. That'd have to be investment.
Well, he mentioned that there was something to the church directly.
So we created a fund so that people weren't just giving to our general offering. So they're giving specifically to this fund, and that fund was invested.
Okay, so that fund was a portion of the equity share.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So there is about $500,000 in equity invested in our house, and about half of that is the church's money.
Okay.
And about half of it is five other.
And then my second question is, what happens if you just pay off the house? Like, if it's fully paid, when do they get their money back? You never sell it or move.
Well, I mean, eventually
the house will be
eventually
sold.
The house is sold,
okay.
Or right? I mean,
whenever you die or whatever.
Exactly. And then it would go.
Okay.
I think you would pay off the loan, which isn't the same as paying off. Get off the loan, then we probably have to get another loan to cash out the investors.
Yeah.
This
is just more clarifying. This is all about my in some ways. So you essentially are fundraising, and that money is going to be placed in a particular fund through at the church or whatever, and that's how you. That's what you use for your down payment. Is that correct, Michael?
I mean, essentially what you're doing is reducing the amount of money off the mortgage.
in order to buy the house by increasing. So well, there's my down payment and then there's the equity share.
But yeah. And to be clarification, so in your case, $500K, $250 is from individuals who put money in as investors, $250 is from the church. That $250 from the church is money that individuals had contributed to the church
yes.
to a fund
yes.
that was considered a charitable gift.
Yes.
That's what I want to
yes.
clarify.
Yes. Exactly.
That's what you all have been asking around that question.
Yes.
So in Bryce's case,
is $500,000 in the equity share. Of that $500,000, $250,000 is from individual donors who invested in it, and they will get their money out as individual investors when the property is paid off, sold, whatever. The other $250,000 was put in by the church.
The church invested in the property, and they will get a portion when the property is sold. But that $250,000 from the church
came from individuals that gave to the church
a charitable gift, and the church used those charitable dollars to enter into the equity.
And when those people gave to the church, they could deduct it like any other gift to the church.
But why wouldn't those other people, the other $250,000, why wouldn't they just put it to the church?
Because it's an investment. They want the money back.
When you give it to the church, you don't. The individual doesn't get the money back. The church gets the money back.
So an investor that has $50,000 that wants to help you get into a house but can't donate that money can still invest that money.
Yeah, they treat it as an investment, not a charitable donation.
Yeah.
Right. The bottom line is there.
Some.
As ministers, you don't know this because it's not your experience.
But
there are some people that are maxing out their charitable giving every year. And they are looking for other ways, right,
to serve
and give that isn't a tax deduction. And this is a way for them to give and as an investor above and beyond their charitable giving.
And that rate.
Yeah.
And their rate of return then has been negotiated functionally.
Well, I mean the largest portion of their rate of return is going to be tied to the appreciation of the value of the property, right? Which in our case is probably about 4%. But there is a provision, as Tim was saying, that, and this is where I'm a pastor and I don't really understand how this works, but the investors are going to get 101% back, not 100%.
Mm-hmm. Plus
of their money, plus the appreciation.
Right. That's the incentive. Here, Tim.
I was just going to add on the charitable side. So the idea was, in Bryce's situation, the charitably inclined investor gave to the church, took a charitable deduction, and that's all the church's value now. Church gets that portion of the equity share out. But there could be charitable investors who give money to a donor advised fund and then advise the donor advised fund to invest in that equity share as either a straight up investment, or it could be even considered a program related investment, a charitable investment.
So we have about 10 minutes. Maybe a little less than 10 minutes.
I'm happy to keep going down this trail, but if there are any questions on another topic, I would love to have those as well. If there's not, let's keep going. This is awfully complex. So, anyway, go ahead.
Right. Can you speak to what it was like to have the conversation with the elder, and then what was shared, if anything, with the congregation as a whole in this process to have everyone be on board with this new idea?
So I would say, as a pastor, you really want to have somebody else that can
help you
navigate this. I mentioned some providential relationships, and there's somebody in our church that actually made this connection with able to lead the committee that, that raised the equity and talk, could help our elders understand. Helping the congregation understand, I mean, I will say, like, we sat through a very uncomfortable congregational meeting where people asked questions about how much should I get paid and what's going to, when this happens, what's going to happen to the money that the church pays for my rent now and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's.
Do you think that congregational meeting was required, and that's how your church decided to sit right?
Well, you're probably going to have to raise funds, either donation or investment from within your congregation. In our case, it was actually beyond our congregation, but you're going to have that conversation.
Okay.
But having somebody else that can lead that conversation is going to be important part of the process for sure.
So it's about leave your call.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think there's two parts of it. Don mentioned some of these ambiguous situations. And with a forgivable loan, if you leave before that loan is fully forgiven, how does that play out? One of the benefits of this is that if sometimes you leave in a less than ideal situation. And if that were to happen, I would really only have to be in communication with Sycamore Equity about how to wrap things up. So I would say that's a plus. There is a stipulation that those the equity investors would have to be cashed out within 6 months of making the
Can I just say,
one of the other things we've seen is there are some, you know, years ago, the Mance was the way that it was done. And then we went through a season in the real estate market where churches were like, we know it hurts our pastors. We want to go ahead and have them buy their own place. And it does feel like the market has changed again. And we do have churches in our denomination that have gone back to purchasing Mances for their ministers. Now they're setting up an equity allowance. So they're actually, the pastor is getting equity while that they've got that house, but they have determined it was better for the church to buy homes near the church and have their pastors live in them and ensure that they're getting a building equity. And then they're not having to do this crazy call package, the call package dance every time somebody came into their area and prices skyrocketed. So.
If this is presented as an option,
yes.
What is starting this process look like?
You mean the equity?
Yeah, like talking to Sycamore or whoever. Like, what
reach out to Stephen.
Yeah.
How do you start for you, Bryce?
Well, actually, it began by me talking to Bob Miles, who is a pastor, you know, in our Presbyterian
on our board,
helping me think about. You know, there are some creative ways to figure out how to buy this house. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know what Geneva's involvement is going to look like here, but you can reach out to Sycamore and have a conversation.
I think to a point that Bryce
made earlier about having someone else advocate for you, that's our point of view on virtually any financial conversation that pastors have
with their set. You almost always want to have someone
than you talking to your session, at least with you, if not for you, because you almost always end up in that weird position of advocating for yourself, and it feels self-serving in ways that are just kind of unfair, and especially on something like this that is so fraught and is almost inevitably going to end up with very large sums of money and is so confusing. So we're happy to help. I know that if you call Sycamore or one of those other companies, they're happy to help. Steven's been helping folks. My guess is that this is going to become more and more common because this used to be a problem in New York and California and Chicago, and now it's a problem in Denver and Dallas and Nashville and Atlanta, and it's everywhere.
how much we have?
We have 3 minutes.
Did you want to say anything from the foundation standpoint, like just about how y'all are thinking about this?
Oh, I alluded to it. Like our DAF, we would permit them to invest.
A donor advised fund
would permit investment into an equity arrangement like this.
And I just want to add one thing real quickly, which is one of the things we talked about earlier is a solution is increased compensation. And one of the things I do want to say, if any of you ever have any influence on call packages, is that is a viable solution. And a lot of our pastors are underpaid, and if we fix their compensation, they could afford houses. So that's something that we advocate very, very hard for. The second thing I wanted to say, and then I'm done, is I am encouraging churches when I meet with them to go ahead and start saving now. You may not be hiring an assistant pastor for 3 years. You may not need to look for a new pastor for 5 years, but you are going to at some point. And why not go ahead and start setting aside $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year to save for this eventuality? Whether you do a forgivable loan, whether you do some sort of bonus, whether you do an equity share, you are seeing that this is going to continue to be an issue in the U.S. with pastoral call packages. Let's start planning for it. So, anyways.
Saw a question over here. Mine don't even require an answer, just nods. We have a man from the 1940s that needs a roof and needs windows. We're handling some of that. Any way to work that in with home rent for value of the home?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
If the people that have the equity share make 101%, what's Sycamore making?
Yeah, that's good.
So Sycamore is making money.
It's a business, right? And so my understanding is they make money three ways. There's a fee that we pay essentially like as a point on our loan. If you pay a point to buy down your rate, functions the same way. That goes to them. There is a maintenance fee that gets charged to investors while the funds are deployed.
Take a cut on the back end.
All of that's part of their agreement.
All right, I'm gonna give you the last question.
We're done. We're at time. Although unlikely, because of timing difference, what happens if the price or the value of the thing at the time of the sale? Does everybody share?
Yeah, you sure. Share pro plus.
They all share. It's an investment at that point.
All right, everyone. We're at time.